Well, as we said last week on the podcast, this team is great and can't be stopped. Welcome into Scrambled Eggs, everyone, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann here with Phil Bush. And Phil, I joke about it, but, you know, obviously it was a lot of doom and gloom last week, a little more positive this week.
Yeah, it's amazing what a difference a week can make. We were looking down the barrel of oblivion, and now we're merely, you know, 100 feet from said barrel.
Yeah, I think, as we said at the end of the show last week, really, you know, a lot can change in a week. And Marquette's definitely surprised us getting two wins in Brooklyn. We're going to talk about that. And of course, the relatively easy win over Jackson State on Sunday. What I thought would be fair, Phil, would be to kind of go through the concerns we had in last week's podcast after the dismal loss at Iowa and kind of readdress them, and maybe just on a scale of, okay, this has definitely been fixed, or it is currently being fixed, or this is still a huge concern as we go forward with this team.
I think that makes all the sense in the world, and people should be familiar with it if they were listening to us last week.
Yeah, but if for those of you who don't want to go back and listen to last week's show, that's fine. We have the notes right here for you. We'll kind of hit them one at a time. Obviously, the big thing we hit on last week, Phil, was the undisciplined three-point shooting. And I think anyone who saw the team against Iowa and then watched them against LSU saw a noticeably different approach offensively, much more patient and noticeably trying to get the ball inside on every possession. And just that one simple adjustment, I mean, what a world of difference it made.
Yeah, in the post-game conference after the Jackson State victory today, as Sunday, if you're listening to it tomorrow, Wojo reiterated again that this is a team that works inside out. That they need a paid touch, they need a post possession before they even think. Because Homer from the Marquette radio broadcast specifically said, "What does a good three look like from Marquette? What is one you would accept?
One that goes in."
Well, yeah, one that goes in. But Wojo said, you know, it's one that comes in the flow of the offense after we've gotten the ball inside, either on the drive or on a post touch. So that's good. That's the coaching decision. That's what we like to see. We saw more of that against LSU and Arizona State, which helped. We also saw more three-point shots go in. You know, we've gone up almost 7 percentage points as a team in terms of three-point percentage. So good. But if I'm scoring, I say this is still in progress, because there's some improvement, but there's a couple of notable individuals that have missed the memo, it seems.
Yeah, I guess, you know, you're mainly talking about Dwayne there.
Yes, I am.
You know, Dwayne's obviously shooting the ball pretty poorly from three right now, and a few others are. But worth noting, Phil, Marquette, as we're recording this on Sunday night, 28th in the country in two-point percentage, this according to KenPom. So on two-point field goals, Marquette is 28th in the country at 56%.
So we should probably take more of those, huh?
On three-point percentage, they are 329th in the country. That would be about 32nd from the bottom.
Yeah, so no less threes and more
22nd
twos.
From the bottom. That's 22nd worst in the country. So yes. But yeah, I think Wojo is 100% right. And that's kind of the thing we addressed. That's another concern we brought up last week, was coaching, and that kind of goes into this whole thing. You know, obviously, a big concern, it seemed like the players were just kind of doing their own thing early on in the season and just jacking up a lot of threes and not really buying into the offense. And I think that definitely changed. And it was, you know, of course, it was funny. We all saw the pictures on Twitter and, you know, on the ESPN broadcast of them practicing in white T-shirts, plain old gym shorts that you could buy at your local, you know, Walmart.
Goodwill store.
Yeah, and they practice on an outdoor court in Brooklyn instead of a nice warm gym somewhere. So obviously he humbled them a little bit to get his message across. And that is coaching. Maybe people might not everyone want to qualify that as great coaching, but I admire that because he had to get a point across, and he got it across, and the team responded to it.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is one of those things. It's, you know, damned if it doesn't work, and you get all the praise if it does work. You know, and did it the right way. The coaching staff, you know, basically his point was nobody here has earned anything. So we're all going back to square one and we're going to start earning things back, which, you know, it's great. And it did have the desired effect. You wonder how that's going to continue. You know, so they've won three in a row now. What happens the next time they kind of take a step back? Because with the youth of this team, there will be steps back. We're not on a rocket ship to number one here at this point.
Yeah, and I think that's the important thing to keep in mind. It's not like everything is fixed and it's, you know, they're going to win out from here. I mean, we're not that naive about it. You know, there's still going to be plenty of young mistakes, especially as the talent level steps up as Marquette gets into Big East play. But they are addressing some of the major concerns we had. And again, I said last week that my hope is that Iowa was rock bottom and they will never play that bad again. Even if they do lose several more games, they will never look that bad again losing any other games. And so far, and so what we've seen this past week, I think Iowa was rock bottom. And like, again, they're not going to revert to that where they're just going down jacking up threes. Luke Fisher's role in the offense has increased significantly and he has responded. He is shooting 66% on his from the field right now.
Yep.
That's pretty darn good. I mean, they just keep getting him in the post, and there were several shots, I want to say, in the Arizona State game where he just had good position and they just didn't fall.
Right, yeah, they kind of rimmed out.
Yeah, I think he is having a great year in what essentially is his first full season of college basketball, because he had to sit out a half year as a freshman at Indiana. He had to sit out a half year as a transfer to Marquette as a sophomore, and now this will be his first full season. I think he's responding, and he's healthy too.
Right. You know, his shoulder, he's definitely going up, finishing with contact. He's not shying away like he was last year, and you can really tell the difference. Well, what's going to be interesting is kind of circling back, you know, kind of combining the coaching and the three-point offense. Right now, we clearly, from a three-point standpoint, we have two guys who should probably have green lights all the time: Sandy Cohen and Hanif Cheatham, who's 7 of 11 from three-point range right now.
Cheatham with a great game.
Oh, fantastic. On, my man crush is fully back.
Granted, against a lesser opponent, against Jackson State, but those shots fall against just about anybody. The shots he was taking, he was getting open looks, he was getting to the basket. Again, the open threes, like you said, he's 7 of 11 from three on the year. Cheatham looks good, and I think that's one thing that kind of goes with the point guard issue that we brought up last week. Getting him away from the point guard spot, which is not his strength, he turns the ball over a lot when he's bringing the ball up and trying to distribute. But when he's off the ball, I think he's just such a much better player. And I think he really thrived these last few games when Tracy Carter was controlling the ball and was playing the point.
Yeah, there's an argument to be made that Hanif right now in the way that he's playing is playing better as the two guard than Dwayne Wilson is. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, Dwayne Wilson is shooting 22% from three, but the bigger issue is not so much his shooting percentage, but the volume of threes he's taking. Mm-hmm. He's 10 of 45 from three, 30 of 77 from total. So if you look at his 2-point shooting, he's somewhere in the range of 55-60% from two. If he just
He's actually 20 of 32, 62%.
Yeah. So if he just takes less threes and takes some mid-range jumpers, that's one of the changes we saw today. We'll see if it sticks against Jackson State. Is Henry Ellenson also fewer threes, was taking some beautiful mid-range jumpers that were going mm-hmm. in. Just, you know, take what you can get. You know, we don't need to jack so many threes. So I think if Dwayne and Henry can kind of get their three-point addiction under control a little bit more, the offense will really start to flow even better, I think.
Yeah, and I like you, back to the point you were making earlier, the two guys who appear to be, you know, have the green light on threes would be Cheatham and Cohen. And everyone else really has dialed it back, or either should dial it back or already has dialed it back as far as three-point shooting. And they're buying into the offensive scheme, getting it into Fisher or Ellenson. And Ellenson is playing a little bit more of an inside game, you know, with at least within the arc. He hasn't shot as many threes lately. But, yeah, Dwayne Wilson's three-point shooting remains a bit of a concern going forward. So, but overall, pleased with the progress as far as the coaching, three-point shooting, the offensive philosophy. It just simply, it's better because it was rock bottom a week ago.
Right.
Playing Iowa. Mm-hmm. One thing we haven't talked about, Phil, the defense. What have you seen from the defense in the past week? Positive, negative, encouraging?
I think they're just they're getting more used to working with each other. And the defense is while not great, is still a work in progress. But I think their communication is better. They're not scrambling as much, you know. So if help comes, you know, they're helping and then getting back to their man, whereas before they were almost completely abandoning their man, which was setting up all sorts of three-point opportunities around the arc to give the other team, you know, plenty of points. So I think they're starting to get a little bit more organized. I think defense with a young team is always going to be one of the last things to really solidify.
Yeah, I think the defense is definitely a work in progress, but a step up from rock bottom against Iowa the week before. They are learning a little bit. I think they're maybe getting a little more comfortable playing zone when they have to. But I think we have seen a little bit. I think we probably saw mostly man-to-man today against Jackson State because it really wasn't much of a panic mode.
And they played mostly man against Arizona State as well, and mostly man against LSU. And I think they're getting more comfortable with the rules and playing without fouling. That Arizona State game was a foul fest, but that was going both ways. That was more an aberration than anything the team was doing weird, in my opinion.
For what it's worth, they sure aren't sending their opponents to the line very much. A top 10 in the country as far as free throws, the free throw rate on KenPom, which is free throws attempted compared to field goals attempted. So, hey, they're not fouling. So in your face, Bucky.
Yeah. Let's see if that holds up when we go to Madison. That's a whole different environment for that sort of thing. But I think the defense is starting to gel, and I think part of that, really, the defense being more successful, I think really comes from Marquette taking better, smarter shots on offense and making those shots. It's a lot easier to set up your defense against someone bringing the ball up the court the full length after a made bucket than it is on a scramble defense when they're running a breakout after a long rebound on a poorly shot three.
Yeah, that is true. It is a little bit easier to set up your defense in that situation. So another thing I think I've noticed, Phil, talking about the point guard spot, is I think as Tracy Carter has settled in, the offense has started to take shape a little more. Because, you know, he's not shooting the ball. In the first few games, he was definitely shooting the ball a lot, or a little too quickly, I would say. But I think he's getting a little more comfortable as far as distributing and running the offense. And I think everything else has kind of gelled around him with that move to kind of put him in the starting lineup and have Dwayne coming off the bench.
Yeah, absolutely. And Tracy Carter has kind of taken ownership of that point guard position. I don't think there's any doubt that as long as Tracy Carter is playing up to his potential, he should be the starting and majority minute earner at the point guard position. The offense flows better. It's quicker. He's able to make entry passes that other folks into the post that other folks seem reluctant to do. So I think he makes all the difference. He's kind of become the straw that stirs the drink, and he's got offense. I mean, I like the ball. He's aggressive at times, driving the lane. It's maybe not what you want, but in that Arizona State game, unlike the Belmont game when he drove recklessly and turned the ball over, he drove the lane late in the in regulation against Arizona State and had a shot at a bucket. It didn't work out, but you like him trying to win with the ball in his hands. He's proving more and more capable with each game, which I think is great.
Yeah, and yeah, Marquette's going to need him to settle in, as he has been, and just continue to evolve in that spot. And I think the offense will continue to grow. As he gets used to it and plays the lion's share of the minutes there. And I think once these other things that we've talked about kind of settle into place with, you know Dwayne's shot coming around or him just figuring it out, I think as those things tend to settle in, I think they'll be fine offensively. I don't think necessarily be amazing, but I think they'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, Joe, let me ask you this. Who, you know, so if we say Tracy Carter is the primary minutes at the point guard, who right now would you say is best suited to be the backup point guard?
I would have to say Dwayne, I guess, just by default, just because I just don't like Cheatham in that spot. I just don't think it's his strength. I think he's so much more of a weapon off the ball, and I think he's so much more. He turns the ball over when he's at the point. Now, and I know Dwayne is not immune from turnovers either, but I think he's just a little bit more comfortable, and it's crazy it is to say about a redshirt sophomore. He is one of the more veteran presences on the team.
Yeah, I agree. But, and I think Dwayne, I mean, in the NBA, if Dwayne has any NBA aspirations, point guard is going to have to be the position he does so at. I think it's Hanif, it's just too much for Hanif right now. Maybe his future is as a point guard, which would be awesome. But he's got good court vision, but he just doesn't value the ball quite as much as maybe a Tracy Carter or Dwayne Wilson does. I think Dwayne's just in a better position to be the backup one, but we'll see how that evolves.
Yeah, I think going forward, I don't think a point guard would even necessarily come into play for Cheatham, because Carter's going to be there as long as he is, and plus next year Rousey is eligible.
That's
and,
true.
You know, Rousey's going to be a point guard, so I think Cheatham's probably going to be off the ball his entire Marquette career, barring injuries or transfers.
Which is weird given how much Wojo insisted that Hanif would be, I guess insistent is the right word, but there was continual rumors about how Hanif was going to be playing the one, and that we were going to convert him into a point guard. When you line it up that way, and given his skill set, you wonder why that was even a thing, or if that was just a necessity.
Maybe at the time he just wasn't that comfortable with Tracy Carter in the role, and he just saw the athleticism of Cheatham and said, well, maybe we can make this work, and he could turn out to be really good. And who knows, maybe Cheatham will turn into a point guard, and guys could always transfer or move around or leave the program or whatever. But I just see his future off the ball, as a two guard and a very, very good one at Marquette.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree.
So, but yeah, as far as your short-term question, I do think I think this is where it's actually valuable for Dwayne coming off the bench, because then he can fill into the point guard role when Tracy Carter needs a rest, or he can come off and play the position he's more comfortable at, or when he's been a little more productive at, which is the two guard. So I think, it's not like it's a new thing for Marquette's most productive player to come off the bench. We saw that for like 3 years with Devontae Gardner. So, as far as the answer to your question, I think Dwayne is essentially the backup point guard. But other than that, when Tracy Carter is able, I think he will be controlling the ball.
Right, and it's not like Dwayne's not getting starters minutes. I mean, he's averaging the same as Henry Ellenson. They're both averaging 31.5 minutes a game. So they're our big minutes winner on the team. So, yeah, I agree. It's basically Dwayne is almost always out there. And if Tracy's out there, he's playing the two. And if Tracy's not out there, I think he primarily will play the one.
Yeah. One thing I do want to talk about, Phil, is not so much an issue from last week, but just looking at this past week we've had as a whole for Marquette. Again, as we always kind of cling to hopes of building a resume and seeing what kind of postseason aspirations this team has, going to Brooklyn and getting two wins was just such a relief for Marquette, really. Because I wouldn't say it totally cancels out Belmont and Iowa losses, but it really is a step in that direction by getting a win over a top 25 team, which, by the way, unless I'm mistaken, I think that is the first top 25 win for Marquette since the Sweet 16 win over Miami.
Yeah, and it's Wojo's first top 25 win ever, according to Twitter.
Yeah, well, that's for sure, because they definitely didn't win one last year.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure they didn't beat a top 25 team in buzzes last year.
I don't believe they did, no.
So that would go back to the Sweet 16 win, Sweet 16 win that got them to the Elite Eight over Miami. And their last regular season win was March 2nd of that same year against Notre Dame. That was the last time Marquette had beaten a ranked team in the regular season. So it had been a while.
That's not good, right?
No, it's not good to go 2.5 years without a win over a ranked team. But, hey, it's over.
Right.
Reset. And hopefully we can get another win over a ranked team sooner rather than later. Might actually be a while to play a ranked team. we can get to that in a minute. But you've got to salute the team. If you're going to rip them when they do poorly, you got to salute them when they do well. And I thought they responded to what Wojo challenged them with in Brooklyn, and that was to earn the Marquette name back. You're going to play in these white jerseys and these crappy gym shorts until you prove something. And they responded, and they got two wins to really restore some confidence to not only the fan base, but more importantly to themselves. It's like, all right, guys, we were not as bad as we showed last week.
Right. Well, and I think the other thing, those two games, not only were they wins and start to build some confidence, I also think they got some practical experience on how to play with the lead. I mean, when they were playing the Ben Simmonses of Louisiana State, for those playing the drinking game at home, they
he got a lot of problems. He did.
Yeah, just a touch. But they learned how to, I mean, they were in control of that game all the way until the last 2 minutes of the game. Same with Arizona State. They were making a run late to try and win, and they were playing from in front and you know, lost both leads, managed to win the game. So that's some valuable experience in terms of how to play with leads, how to win closeout games, make your free throws, protect the ball. Don't take 3-point shots no matter how open they are with 25 seconds left on the shot clock and a 2-point lead.
The gif of Wojo reacting to Dwayne taking that
the greatest
three,
thing on the internet.
That is my favorite. That is the leader in the clubhouse for my favorite Marquette thing on the internet this season. If you haven't seen it, it is as great as you imagine it is, as Dwayne lines up to take that three. Again, exact same situation as the Belmont game. About 40 seconds left, roughly 20 in the shot clock. Dwayne, nobody within 10 feet of him, lines up a three. He has that look like, I probably shouldn't do this, but man, I got it. And Wojo is kind of like, no, no, no. Okay, maybe it'll go to me finally. Oh, no. And he just expletive, expletive, expletive as he threw his hands in the air. And it was just brilliant. But thankfully, that one did not cost Marquette a win. They were able to hold on and beat LSU. But that just Wojo's reaction to that is like coaching a young team summarized in a gif.
Yeah, absolutely. All of life's frustration in one quick caption. But like I said, the team learned, you know, from a youth perspective, which was one of the things we talked about last week. Was the inexperience, and they're gaining experience with every game that goes by. You kind of saw it in Jackson State today. While they're not great, they're still, you know, right now, according to KenPom, 224th in the country. So it's certainly a bye game. But they took it to Jackson State, and they did all the things they were supposed to do. I don't know that would have happened prior to LSU. I think that Jackson State game might have been a little bit tougher for them, you know, without some of that experience on how to win, how to close out, and how to be successful with their talent.
Yeah, I think they've certainly learned to, you know, if things don't go your way on a few offensive possessions in a row, going down and shooting a quick three doesn't make anything better. And I think anytime they get in a little bit of trouble, it's like they take a breath, they bring it down, get in the half court set, and they work it in to either Fisher or Ellenson or both. And so I think there's a lot of patience, and I think as long as they keep doing that, as long as Fisher and Ellenson keep producing in the post, which there's no reason to think they won't, I think they're going to be successful. I think they're, I mean, again, they're not going to win every game, but I don't think they're going to get humiliated in many games either.
I agree. I think they're, and it's going to be interesting. With the exception of Wisconsin, there's seven easily won games here coming up.
Yeah, according to KenPom, Marquette is favored. There's at least a 92% chance or better that Marquette wins all of their next. 5 of their next six games, and then they have Wisconsin as a 20% chance. So basically Marquette now has three more bye games after this Jackson State game to continue to evolve a little bit, maybe this would be a great chance for Dwayne to continue to try to find that shooting stroke, try to find his comfort level in the offense. And you'll notice Juwan Johnson didn't play today. He had a death in the family, so that's kind of why he was held out on Sunday, if you didn't know that. He had just gotten back from the funeral, I guess, the day of the game, and so he just, you know, maybe needed some time. He'll probably need some time with his teammates.
Yeah, he left Friday and came back Sunday, so he got a couple of minutes, but not much.
Yeah, so, but the thing is, Juwan has been one of the bright spots early on in the season, though. Obviously, he didn't play on Sunday, but I think Juwan is actually, you know, we commented on that even last week when we were talking doom and gloom last week, that Juwan was one of the bright spots, is that I think he has matured. And he's been very patient on offense. He's been aggressive attacking the basket, and I think he's really evolving into a bit of a leader for the team. So it'll be a chance for him to get back in the flow of things as kind of the offense is starting to figure itself out. So I would expect he and a lot of other people really to play plenty of minutes in these next three games, because you're looking at Grambling State, Maine, and San Jose State, which they are ranked. Grambling is ranked what I call DFL, Phil. That is dead freaking last. In KenPom, they are 351 in the country, so Marquette's at a 99% chance to win that game per KenPom. Maine, not much better. They're 296, and San Jose State at 336. So, bottom line, those are three games that Marquette should win by double digits easily before they go to Wisconsin. And, you know, you look ahead to that Wisconsin game, and we'll break down that game when we get to it, Phil.
Badger hate week.
Yeah, and that's always a fun week. You know, Anonymous Eagle, they really blow that out, and it's hilarious. But, you know, that is a game where, you know, if that is a tipping point game for the season, really, because if you're talking about resume and stuff, and I know we're still a long way from talking about this team about being a tournament team realistically, but that's kind of a tipping point game, really, because there's no other great chances for wins in the non-conference. So, but if you can beat Wisconsin, then you're looking at only two losses in non-conference play, and even though, you know, they were kind of ugly losses, they're both super early. And with the win over Wisconsin, who, let's be honest, has not been typical Wisconsin early this season.
Yeah, they've got three losses. Well, and what it comes down to is, you know, and we've gone over the schedule over and over, but at this point the schedule is what it is. The key thing is, if you can get that Wisconsin win and you can be playing strong at the end of the season in conference, I think the committee's shown year after year that they're willing to take a team playing well and forgive some early season struggles or some issues or things like that. So, you know, you play this schedule that's in front of you, and we just got to go out and win some games. Yeah. And get really, you know, just get really set in our offense and our defensive strategy. These next three games will be, you know, I don't want to belittle them, because you can always lose. But
yeah, the team that played Iowa could lose any one of those games.
Yeah, correct. But you know, to a certain extent, we should view these as really risky scrimmages where they're trying to do different things and figure out all the pieces, so that they can go into, say, a Madison, or, you know, into, you know, Xavier on the road and perform at a high level and be successful.
Right. Yeah. These next three games, just a chance to continue to fine tune what they've been working on. And I have to say, the Jackson State game, for the most part, went just about exactly as you would want a bye game to go. It was really never in doubt. They were pretty much ahead the whole way. I mean, you're not going to lead by 10 after the first minute. So they slowly pulled away. They were never, you know, like, they were never really lost control of the game. They executed well. They never really got too terribly sloppy as the game went along. It was just a very comfortable win. I expect three more things like that. Maybe play some guys who didn't play as much. We noticed Sakar Anum didn't play in this game, because the game got a little closer than Wojo would have preferred at the end. And of course, Juwan Johns didn't play. He was, you know, again, coming back from the death in the family. So I think you'll see, maybe try to work some more guys in. Maybe he throws a few wrinkles in here defensively, offensively. I don't know what that may be. But opportunities to improve as much as you possibly can, because despite, no matter what you may think of Wisconsin right now, that is going to be a very tough game in 2 weeks, and it's going to be a very critical game as we talk about going forward and trying to make Marquette's resume as good as it possibly can be.
Yeah, absolutely, because the Big East is starting to shape up as a really tough. I mean, we knew it was going to be tough, but it's shaping up to be really tough. There's a lot of good teams in the Big East, which is
really good. Nice feast week. Really nice feast week for the Big East, by the way. Since you brought that up, you know, as we're recording this, four holiday tournament titles: Creighton, Marquette, Villanova, Xavier, all won their respective tournaments. And that, I say as we're recording this, because we still have Providence yet to play Michigan State. I'm sure Michigan State probably a heavy favorite in that game, but crazier things have happened, especially when you got a guy like Chris Dunn on your team. So if Providence could pull that upset, I mean, that would be, even if they don't, that's a heck of a week for the Big East. So another, you know, another strong, as it was last year, Phil, a strong non-conference showing for the most part from the Big East.
Yeah, well, and I had a kind of a snarky comment, I think, back to John Rothstein on Twitter today, because, you know, people are bringing up, hey, the Big East is really doing well. At some point, we need to stop acting surprised that the Big East is a good basketball conference and just accept it. But they've got to keep going out and proving it, and so far they have. So if we should be in the non-conference, we should be cheering, unless we're playing one of the Big East teams for some reason. We should always be cheering for other Big East teams, because the better the conference looks, the better it is for Marquette.
I chuckle when you bring up Rothstein. Did you see the University of Tulsa snipe back at him this week?
Yeah, his tagline has not been real successful for him.
I would like to see, somebody needs to research how many times he's used that all fun and games until somebody loses a bye game thing, and how many of times out of the times he's used it has actually been a bye game, because it's a low percentage.
Yeah, because we know he did that with us with the Gav, or that,
the yeah, with us and with the Radford thing with Georgetown, which was not a bye game either. And there was two or three more. But anyway, this isn't the Rothstein podcast. But yes, back to your original point. I think people should stop like saying, "Hey, Big East," talking about it like it's the Sun Belt, you know? Like, "Wow, look at these guys."
Yeah.
But
the Midwest Atlantic Conference is somehow number 3 in the country in conference rating.
Yeah, it shouldn't be a shock. Granted, we all realize and we all are fully accepting of the fact that this is not the old Syracuse, UConn, Georgetown, you know, St. John's type Big East where they had 3 teams in a Final Four. You know, it's not. We fully realize that, but it is still a very strong conference with an RPI that stands up with any Power 5 conference. You know, I think as we're recording this right now, the Big 12 has the best, ACC is second, and then the Big East is third. So that means the Big East is ahead of the Pac-12 and the SEC.
And the Big 10.
And the Big 10, yeah. And the almighty Big 10 with, you know, that wonderful Rutgers program sitting in there keeping it down.
Big 10 powerhouse Rutgers.
By the way, speaking of old friends, if you need a chuckle, go back to the you might have to scroll back now as you finally read this, the No Escalators Twitter account, the SB Nation for UConn. They did basically a spoof of the Adele song, and they were tweeting it at Syracuse. Like, hello. It was. I can't do it justice on this podcast, mainly because I can't sing. But basically, it was like, "Hello, it's me." I was wondering if you want to get together and play UConn basketball. It's like my favorite line was, like I said, "Time's supposed to heal you, but I haven't done a whole lot of healing." Did win another championship though, and just a bunch of snarky comp. It was absolutely brilliant. I laughed so hard, and I hated that UConn didn't beat Syracuse.
Yeah, I did too. Oh, the other one that was really good. The other Twitter was the. Someone put a breaking, I don't remember who it was, but put a breaking tag saying that the Big Ten is parting ways with Rutgers and wishes them nothing but success in the future.
Rutgers. We can always laugh. Thanks. You know, we got the good end of that deal at least.
Oh, whew, boy, did we get lucky.
Yeah, well, so I guess we really, we normally break down the upcoming games in this podcast, and I guess we broke down Grambling, Maine, and San Jose State as much as we really need to, because those are the games. Well, at least Grambling and Maine are the ones we have coming up next week. We'll probably have a podcast next week breaking down the thrilling contest between those two schools. But again, these are two games Marquette should win handily, and I expect just about every scholarship player to play at least a little bit this week, and hopefully maybe they figure out something. Again, if Dwayne's shot comes around, but other than that, I fully expect them to continue the effort going inside, establishing Fisher and Ellison just about every game. I think that's going to be Marquette's recipe for success, no matter who they play.
Absolutely, and one thing that I think we would be remiss to mention right now, if we didn't mention, is Henry Ellison. Just looking up his stats, he is nearly averaging a double-double. He's got 15.2 points and 9.8 boards for his average. We should enjoy this.
Enjoy it as long as we possibly can. Don't know how much longer it's going to last. But, yeah, Ellison's been, I'd say, about as good as advertised. Yeah, and it hopefully it's a fun ride and we can make the most out of it and make a lot of noise in the Big East, and we'll see where the season takes us. But, again, this past week has just been refreshing for Marquette after doom and gloom a week ago. Been nice to have a little bit of a happier tone to this week's podcast, and really we're just kind of got it in cruise control for about 2 weeks before we get up for the really big one against Madison. But I think we're mostly satisfied for right now, Phil, as we continue to let get the Thanksgiving leftovers out of the refrigerator.
Yeah, I think we're good to go, and let's enjoy a couple of routine games here and get ready for Wisconsin.
Maybe after a couple of bye games, maybe next week, maybe a nice opportunity for some scrambled questions from the audience. So maybe we'll do that next week. So maybe cook that up as we get ready for our next podcast. But again, we always welcome your feedback and your thoughts on the show. You can hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF23, or the team page is Crack Sidewalks. On the Twitters, you can hit us up on cracksidewalks.com. That's where we post the podcast, and you can leave your comments on there. There's also a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page where we post the podcast as well. And of course, we're on iTunes. Download us there. Take us anywhere you go. Phil, other plans for the week besides watching these two excellent bye games?
Just surviving the week and looking forward to Marquette basketball. That's pretty much all I can do.
That's really all anyone can do. Thank you for listening, everyone. Until next time, seashells and balloons.